Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
How's it going?
It's going all right. It's a busy week.
Busy time. There's so much going on. Oh, my goodness. I was telling Lauren this morning that I'm kind of overwhelmed because I need to write about the Apple Watch and the iPhones because I haven't done that yet because, again, I saw no need to review them immediately when everybody had already reviewed them. But now that I've spent time with them, I have to write that. We've got the Six Colors magazine coming out this weekend, so got to write that stuff. I saw you in that document earlier today. There's just a lot. There's a lot happening right now. This is that time. I know it happens like this every year, but I'm like, it's just kind of overwhelming. I'll be working all weekend. That's basically what's going to happen.
Yeah. There are a lot of things to catch up with, and you know, stuff sort of flies by, and you're like, oh. I need to get back to that. And then it just kind of, you know, sometimes falls by the wayside as you're like, oh God, I had a list of things I meant to get back to. You know, I Mojave came out this week. So there's that. And, you know, I got my watch and my phone this week. So I've been setting those up and everything. Yeah, it's a lot going on.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yes. Congratulations on getting a new Apple Watch.
Woo!
That's good. We got Lauren's Apple Watch yesterday, so she got hers. I had ordered it the morning after the order period opened, and it's kept saying it would be like the middle of October, and it wasn't preparing to ship or anything like that. It was just in process. Mm-hmm. And I did that thing where I looked at my local Apple store and they said, you can get it today. I was like, okay, well, there we go. It's going to be today. And so I canceled my other order and picked it up. And so now she's got the new one.
We talked a little bit about delivery shenanigans in our last meeting.
Yep.
And they continued for me, like even as my watch was being, you know, out for delivery, you would go to the UPS tracking page and be like, yep, it's, you know, in transit, left Louisville, Kentucky, should arrive on October 5th. I'm like, that seems like a long time to go from Kentucky to Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Yeah. That seems unnecessary. And then, you know, I got an email. It was like, oh, it'll be delivered tomorrow. But like the tracking page still said the 5th. I was just like, all right, the emails seem to be pretty reliable. Usually when I get an email, it's happening. But yeah, I fortunately it did arrive and it arrived within the window they had quoted me in like the emails I was being sent, but the online tracking tools were extremely inconsistent. One time I thought it was going to arrive on Tuesday and I was like, I don't think that's going to happen either. But yeah, it showed up on the Thursday as was sort of originally expected.
Yeah, it's not the best. And yet Amazon insists on sending me pictures of a box sitting outside my door.
Yeah.
Thanks, yeah, Amazon.
Could be any box. Anybody's door.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's funny. I always feel bad when people are like looking at their UPS truck on the day that everything's being delivered for the first time. Mm. Like, I've tried that. It's not always accurate. And it's funny how I always hear from people who say that they're the last person on their UPS driver's route. Is everybody last, or is it just that the people who are first are they're too busy out having fun with their new Apple products and they're not complaining about it on the internet?
I feel that I'm usually like late in the day. Like if it quotes me like this will arrive sometime between 3:15 and 7:15, it's like on the 7:15 end of the spectrum. This time around, though, I will say they both arrived probably in like the 4 o'clock range. So I was not last.
Good for you.
I will say it. I will say I was not among the last, nor was I among the first. I was solidly in the middle. It's a comfortable place to be.
So how are you feeling about your Apple Watch?
I mean, in the less than 24 hours that I've had it, I like it quite a bit. The screen is truly tremendous. It makes such a huge difference. Every time I get a notification and I look at my wrist and read it, I'm like, oh, this is so legible. It's so big. It's a really nice screen. I have to say, it just, as with the iPhone, it made such a big difference to expand the display space, because it's not only the amount of information that you're getting, which is definitely like information density, which is definitely a part of it, but it's also about, because the display is the control area, the control surface for these devices. So the more control surface you have, the less cramped things feel, the more pleasant some of the UI is. Just in general, like, it's a much more pleasant experience to navigate things when you're dealing with a touchscreen and it's a bigger touchable area. So from that perspective, this feels like, you know, kind of like the jump to the iPhone 6, which is to say, just, you know, more space. And that's, it's nice, especially without sacrificing, I feel like, I agree, we talked about this a little bit last week, but without sacrificing, you know, size, it feels nice. It feels thinner. I don't really notice the extra millimeter or two I hold up the other one next. So yeah, it's clearly bigger than the old one, but like not huge.
Well, and
it doesn't look any bigger than so many watches people wear that are ginormous.
And the corners used to kind of go straight up and then in. And now they kind of curve up. So there's, I think it's less, I don't know. It feels like there's less of it because, and I know it's sort of psychological because it's only really at those little edges that it feels that way, but it does feel that way. And the thinness, I think, really makes a difference. And you made a great point about the control surface. That is huge. It's taken some time for me to get used to. I have these finger movements about like how I put in my little code and that I hit the wrong buttons now. So I'm retraining there. But you know, the fact is, yeah, it doesn't feel as cramped when you are having to kind of touch something on there. And again, it's not ideal. You don't want to spend a lot of time touching stuff on your Apple Watch, but if you need to swipe or tap or something like that, it gives you a little bit more space to hit a button here or there.
Especially if you're using something that's information dense as one of those, you know, like the Infograph watch face, right? Like you don't want to stab with your finger and hit the wrong complication, right? Like, you know, and it feels like things like that, the targets are just much more easy to hit and not make mistakes about it. So yeah, I like it a lot. I've been using the Infograph face, which I am a fan of so far, just because I think the point of the watch for me is the sort of the glanceable information. And so being able to pack that much more stuff on that makes a big difference. It is a little busy, but again, I don't think that it's much busier than a lot of other watch faces you'll see that just sort of clutter things up with tons of little dials and different clocks and date things, etc. So I it doesn't really bother me. And the joy of the Apple Watch is, if that is too complicated for you, there are many other options.
Yeah. We should talk about Mojave, right? It is macOS release week because Apple was kind enough to not release macOS when it released all of the other OSs that it makes. And so this week we get the Mojave release. You know, it's less exciting when there's public betas of everything forever, but it is officially out. A lot of software got updated to support dark mode, which was good to see. A lot of workarounds. You and I have both written about issues with dark mode, especially the fact that so much content is not expecting dark mode, that you end up with apps and web views that are white background, black text, and it really kind of ruins the whole dark mode approach when you've got windows that are blaring white. Utilities going around, a lot of Safari extensions going around to basically like change the color scheme of pages, which it's great as a workaround, but my criticism in my review, which posted on Monday, is I'm really surprised that Apple didn't make an attempt to either earlier this year start really pushing or even come up with its own web extension that basically says detects dark mode and supplies a different style sheet or has a different color map that you can, you know, however they wanted to implement it, or offered a feature in Safari that would sort of detect that you were using a page that was out of color scheme for dark mode and do something about it. And maybe they couldn't do that to their satisfaction, or they were reluctant to modify content of web pages. But the result is that it's really lousy to use Safari in dark mode. Yeah. And instead, there are all these Safari extensions that are, you know, they can do the job and you can set them per site and all of that. But it's not really something that's ideal that you have to go dig that out in order to get web pages to not be blasting in your face.
You know, web designers, this is not to take away from the work that web designers do, right? Like they've made their web pages to look in a certain way.
Yeah.
And flipping those colors.
Where black on white is the traditional style of every computer operating system that's out there, right? It's just the white background is the default. And we're now entering a world where Mac and Windows and presumably iOS at some point will all have two different modes, And what does that mean, especially in a multi-windowed interface on Mac and Windows?
Yeah, I mean, and some sites, I mean, I think, you know, Ars Technica, for example, is a site that, like, has had light and dark options for a long time now.
Sure.
So you can, like, reskin it. And so, like, ideally, in an ideal world, you'd have a lot of websites, or at least, you know, big websites like that, offering different options, which would let their designers decide how something will look in a light or a dark environment, rather than just doing kind of like some sort of client-side hack that makes sort of an overwhelming, like, okay, this is just how everything's gonna look, we're just gonna like change these colors on you, because it may or may not, it may look better in terms of contrast, but it may look worse in terms of just how the colors on the page look. But there's going to be tons of sites that don't want to spend the time to do that, obviously. So I think what will be interesting is, I wonder if you'll see big web providers, you know, people like Squarespace or you know, WordPress, offering more themes that can toggle between light and dark modes. And I don't know if the Apple will have some way for designers to address that, right? To say, like, detect.
There's a proposal, and I think this is the thing, is that it sounds like it might happen at some point that the web standards body will have a way that you could detect a dark mode and supply a different style sheet. But we're not there yet. And, you know, if you want to use Mojave today, that doesn't help you, that they might deal with this in a year or two.
Yeah, so it's a cart before the horse issue, right? Yeah. Like, so, yeah. And I don't know. I mean, and I kind of miss, I think, as you pointed out in your review, that you can't... I on my iMac right now, which I'm still on High Sierra on, you still have the dark menu bar, dark dock option, right? Without the full dark mode, but you can't really do that.
No,
you're, Mojave anymore.
If you want dark menu bar, dark dock, you need dark mode. They all go together.
So
now,
unless someone eventually comes up with a hack for that, which they might, could happen. But I kind of gotten used to that as my default look on my iMac. I'm going to be a little sad to lose it when I go to Mojave and have to decide if I'm doing light mode or dark mode.
I don't really like dark mode. I mean, part of it is that it's inconsistent, and so it's sort of a non-starter for me. But I don't love it anyway. Like, I don't feel the need to have everything be dark. I think the standard mode works for me just fine. I'm actually a little frustrated, and I've joked about this before, but I'm actually a little frustrated with apps that are aggressive in their darkness, not offering you a light mode. Like, not just light apps that now are going to offer a dark mode, but like, and I joked about this and people were like irate. It was like, I would like, okay, Logic used to be light, then they made it dark. Now that there's dark mode in Mojave, can you bring back light mode in Logic so I can choose? Because I would rather not have dark mode. But if you want dark mode, that's fine. Well, what I am very happy with, and I know it's little, but it's something that I have been waiting for well over a decade, which is the ability to change the highlight colors, the menu bar colors and stuff like that, not just your text highlighting, but all these other accent colors from your choices, which before were basically blue or gray. And with gray, everything got desaturated. And now you can just choose from any color. I've got orange, and all the little blue things in the Aqua interface are now orange. And it's just fun. And it's one of those things that feels very fundamentally Mac-like. Like, can I personalize my Mac a little bit? Yes, I can now.
Well, and you could do that in classic Mac OS, right?
Of course you could. Yeah. Yes.
And like, I remember having different... Yeah, I definitely did
and
not
originally,
use
originally, in OS 10, it was all just blue. And people, designers complained because they wanted to...
Graphite,
they wanted to desaturate, and so they added the graphite appearance. And I thought at the time, well, this is great because they're going to add more appearances.
Yeah.
Little did I know it would be 2018 when they did it.
17 years later.
Yeah, or maybe 15, 16 years later. But yeah, exactly. It's ridiculous, but I love it, and I'm very happy for that. So yeah, I've got an appearance upgrade, even though I'm not using dark mode.
Yeah, no, I also had green as my like accent color, whatever you want to call it, back in the classic Mac OS days, and I'm delighted to have that option again in Mojave. I you know, there are a lot of little things like that in Mojave that I appreciate. I mean, obviously people have talked about the fave icons and tabs and Safari, which you can get in the earlier versions if you've upgraded Safari, but like, you know, little changes like that are nice. It feels like Apple is paying, you know, attention to some of it. Like, there's a lot to be said for the changes in like niceties. Like, I understand people want big, you know, splashy features or really major under the hood changes, but there's something in the, you know, there's something in that little like department of just nice touches, like same way when you go in for like a car or something, like into shop for cars, and you like the cars that have nice little human comfort things, right? Like that makes a difference in your experience of using that product. And I think for me, like some of the smaller changes make me feel like, oh yeah, like this is, it's somebody's taking the time to think about how people use this and what people might like. And yeah, it might seem kind of superficial, but I think it makes a difference for a lot of people.
So the big question, and you and I both wrote about kind of different angles of this for Macworld this week, which is like what Apple's doing with the Mac, because there's a lot of criticism out there about some of the decisions Apple made with Mojave. But at the same time, this is a Mac OS release that has stuff that is about the Mac and not just about iOS. So it is Apple re-engaging, I think, in a lot of ways with Mac OS. But by re-engaging, it means that things are going to change and be different. And we're starting down that path right now. I mean, my review called it an inflection point. I feel like this will be the moment. This is the dot where we said this is where the change began. The change is going to get much more radical, but this is where it really started, because this is where they've started to put their plan, whatever their plan is for Mac. It's starting to move right now with Mojave.
People were scared for a long time about this idea that a macOS and iOS, you know, would merge with the tipping of the scales being towards the iOS style, right? Like people were worried that macOS would get stripped of its power features, or it would get locked down and you wouldn't be able to use it. And there were some moves in that direction that, you know, really supported that fear for a little while, right? Like when we dealt with the Mac App Store and sandboxing and all that, like people definitely had
Gatekeeper, all that
reason,
stuff.
Yeah, like reason to worry. But what I think Mojave shows, and I agree with you on this, is like there is still a vested interest in keeping the Mac as its own thing, even if it's going to start to incorporate some stuff or progress or evolve. I mean, you know, and I cited in my piece that interview you did with Phil Schiller and folks, 5 years ago now, 4 or 5 years ago, about on the 30th anniversary of the Mac, talking about the Mac goes on forever, essentially. And yeah, that's great. The Mac does go on forever, but it can't stay the same for that time, right? Like it has to evolve with the times. It can't remain this monolith or, you know, monument up on a pedestal. People are still using it. And as such, it's got to change and evolve. So I think what we're seeing is an interesting experiment where Apple is going to not just like pull the rug out from everybody, you know, overnight and be like, all right, it's Mac OS, but with like iOS now. I think that's the reason we saw these iOS apps make the transition to the Mac this year, even if they are very rough and not very Mac-like, is because it's some time for everybody to sort of digest, think about it, process, and then build on that going forward. This is not the finished form of what that's going to look like. We're not going to just have iOS apps, I believe, you know, whole cloth dumped onto Mac OS and they run just like iOS apps. I think there's going to be more to it than that.
Yeah, I think that's true. Although I had somebody say, oh, of course they're going to do that. And my response was, well, show me, right? Like I'm not going to give it to them. Let's see what they do, because assuming that everything you want will be granted in the next update is a classic blunder of technology writing, and you can't do it. You can't make those assumptions. I hope they do it. I think that's probably their intent. I also do think, though, that there's a flip side to that, which is Apple is going to make the Mac redefine what makes something Mac-like to be more like iOS, and I think that's going to happen too. So I don't expect that these apps... Let me rephrase that to... I expect these apps will be more Mac-like than they are now, right? Like, I expect that iOS apps will not still insist on having a date and time picker that's a spinning wheel.
Right.
And a window that is generated for you to edit something is a little fake window inside a real window, right? I expect that some of that stuff is going to get fixed. However, I do expect that some of the things that we currently consider Mac-like ways of doing things are going to change, and Apple's going to say this is how it works now, and it's going to be like the Mac has to come a little bit toward iOS, just as iOS is moving toward the Mac, so that they kind of can intersect a little bit, and that is going to upset some people, but people don't like change. So of course it's going to upset them. But I do think it's fair to criticize Apple for what they've got, because in the end, there's the big picture, which I think it's good for them to say, look, this is just the start and it's a work in progress. I've heard a bunch of podcasts this week say they should probably have called it a beta. I think that's probably right. They probably should have, because the apps aren't that great and they didn't get much better over the summer. Whatever is going on here, they did get somewhat better, but there's still lots of their fundamental problems are there. But I'm glad to have them, because like Home is a great example. Like, I want HomeKit support on the Mac. It makes the Mac better. Is the app great? No, it's not great, but it is HomeKit support. And I like the idea that Apple is putting its own developers through this process in order to learn what has to go on. Right. All that's good, right, because for next year.
This isn't the situation where, like, it would have been a different story entirely if this year's story had been, okay, we ported all these iOS apps to the Mac, and now you can port your iOS app, right? Like, just if they just
been
like, yep, and we wipe your hands of it. Like, that would have been a really different story, and I think we would have all been taking a much harsher look at this. But because, as you said, they're putting their own developers through this, and we've got probably some time, at least a year, maybe two, before they really open the floodgates, like, there's got to be a rationale behind that, right? Like, they've got to be thinking, well, okay, we're going to learn something, or we're going to work out some kinks, or we're going to find some ways to improve some of the stuff that we've done before. I'm skeptical. I won't say it's impossible, as you said, you never know with these things, but I'm skeptical that they'll just like wait a year and then be like, yeah, everything went fine. Like, here you go. Like, iOS developers, run your stuff on the Mac now. Like, that would seem strange. Like, it would seem strange. Why give yourself a year just to do nothing?
Yeah, it's like, I mean, the practicalities of the fact that everybody would know immediately that these things were from iOS, right? Like,
everybody would know immediately.
So you gotta talk about it, and why not get the features out there? And they're confident. This is a move of somebody who's confident in the direction they're going. They know where they're going with macOS, and this is where they're going. And there are a lot. My piece of Macworld this week was actually about how this is beneficial for Mac and iOS to do this, and it's not just like, hey, Mac user, are you angry because they keep adding features to messages on iOS and you can't see the lasers and you can't see the fireworks or anything like that? You can't send the stickers. Well, you know what would solve that is if the messages app for iOS was also the messages app for the Mac, right? That would solve that problem. If there was a good way to translate it and it would feel like a Mac app, sort of, but it would also be the same app as iOS and they wouldn't have this sort of substandard second version. I believe it's even like they're all web views and stuff. Like, it's not, it's just not a very good app, messages.
Well, yeah, and you're totally right. Like, there are so many apps that are not really mission critical that this would solve problems for, right? Like, Messages is a great example of that. It's an app that certainly we all use all the time, but there's really no reason the Mac app, like, especially because they've pared down a lot of the features that made the Mac app different, right? Like support for other protocols and stuff like that, right? Like, most people are only using Messages probably for iMessage at this point. Sorry, Jabber users. Does it even support Jabber anymore? I don't even know. That's the point, right? Like, there's not enough of a share. There's not enough interest in that to keep that alive. So if you can simplify your life by saying, like, hey, now when we roll out features, we can roll it out to everything at once. You're totally right. Like, that makes a lot of sense. That's a huge way. It's not going to work for every app, right? I doubt you could even do it with Safari because Safari is so complex. But there are a lot of apps where it would be a lot easier to do that.
Yeah. So that's the one side of it is I think it could improve the Mac because there won't be these lagging apps. And then the other side is that it can make iOS better too, because once you've built these apps and had to support multiple windows, and which I think this is a conventional wisdom thing at this point, I think, but like next year's iOS release will presumably, among its features, since it's an iPad focused year, bring split windowing of it within an app to other apps. Safari's got it now, but to other apps. And it wouldn't be surprising if that is the same technology in the same way it's defined by the system and by app developers as doing multiple windows on Mac, right?
Sure,
so you could get kind of both of those features and they kind of are together. It also means that, like, better keyboard support, better keyboard shortcut support. If you're defining your keyboard shortcuts, then you could do it in both places. Or there are apps that have features on one platform but not the other. Like Photos could get better on both platforms if it was a unified thing, because right now the features are kind of a mess. And given the features took this year, or Photos took this year off in Mojave, I suspect maybe it's already happening like behind the scenes, that they're already just like put all the effort into iOS. macOS will pick it up later. iWork is another example where like iWork for iOS continues to get more features and get closer to the Mac version, but they aren't in parity. There are still things that you cannot do on iOS that you can do on the Mac. But if they want to unify and have iWork be the same everywhere, what they hopefully would do, I mean, Apple sometimes does just regress features and you have to suck it. That happens. That happened with iWork. But one would hope that if they're like, oh no, now there's the only, everything in iWork is the same, that this key feature that's only on the Mac, that they would have to bring it there, at which point it would work on iOS and on the Mac. And that would be nice too. So I think there's a lot of positivity that could come out of this eventually, but I think it's also very clear that it's going to be rough sledding and that we're in a transition period and next year is not going to be the end of it, right? Next year is going to be actually kind of the start of the weirdness, and then it'll settle in, but it'll take maybe a couple years beyond that for it to really start to come together.
Yeah, and I think not to lose sight in all of this, is of the, you know, what I was going into in my column was this idea that I think Apple has realized that the Mac does need to be distinct in some way, right? Because, you know, to take it back to that old Steve Jobs analogy about cars and trucks, you know, if you go out to buy a truck, what you don't want is a car that, you know, is purporting to be a truck. So there are still, there are people who are using the Mac because of the power it affords them, because of like power applications that they can get there that they can't necessarily do on iOS. And it's to a certain degree still in Apple's vested interest to maintain the Mac as, you know, something that appeals to that audience, right? Like bringing the whatever concessions they made to get people like Adobe and Microsoft and Barebones to come back at some point, I don't think it's happened yet, but to commit to coming back to the Mac App Store mean that like we've realized this is a value, this is something that really appeals to the users of the Mac, and if we're going to not lose Mac customers, we have to at least, you know, kind of pay attention to what they want and deliver a product that does the kind of things that they need it to do. And I mean, same stuff with them talking about, you know, the Mac Pro revival, right? Like, or bring out the iMac Pro. They've realized that is a big chunk of the Mac market, and it's really important, and it's because it does stuff that iOS can't easily do right now, that they've got to really like bring that back. So, you know, stuff like talking about quick actions or, you know, metadata viewing, right? Like, this is not stuff that most average users care about, but there are people who care about it, and they're vocal too.
and in the end, that may be the what makes the Mac not iOS. And, you know, this has been discussed a lot this summer, but the idea that the Mac is going to be iOS plus, right? Like the Mac is a superset of iOS. It does all the iOS-y stuff, and then it has this other layer of stuff for the people who need that, which is, the software development and the terminal and running on, you know, unapproved apps and, you know, having these pro apps that aren't on iOS yet. Like, that maybe that is the definition of the Mac in the future. It remains to be seen what Apple's complete vision here is, but it seems very clear to me that, you know, iOS style apps are going to be the default way to do development on Apple's platforms going forward, and that Mac style apps are going to be for people who have existing Mac apps, or you have something very specific that you want to do that cannot be done in the iOS security model or frameworks or anything like that. But it does seem like, you know, your garden variety run of the mill Mac app that is new, if such a thing exists in 5 years, will be an iOS and Mac app, not a Mac only app.
Seems like the way it's going. Right? I agree.
Right. Why would you write a new app and say this is only on the Mac if you could also get all the iPads with it, right? Yeah, like, and all the iPhones.
Flip side, I mean, there's an argument for the flip side. Why not address the Mac as a market?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like this, you get that will be the most interesting, I'm going to predict it now, most interesting thing to see next year in terms of apps is going to be who does the work to come to the Mac, because there are going to be ones who do and there are going to be ones who don't. And that's going to be fascinating to see, because the Mac will get an influx of new software, but there are also maybe like holdouts and laggards, as Steve Jobs used to like to call them, who don't. And that'll be fun. But for me, I got to say, like, I love Ferrite, the software that lets me edit podcasts on iOS. And would I switch to Ferrite over Logic on my Mac next fall? Maybe. Maybe. I mean, I want to see it. I want to use it. I want to try it. But I might, because Ferrite has everything I need. I don't actually need Logic for that.
Yeah, no,
it's already got lots of keyboard shortcuts, and they're definable, and they've got different keyboard sets and all sorts of stuff like that. So it's not, you know, there's some good stuff that would let me, you know, that right now I would love to use on my Mac, but is only on iOS. So that part of it makes the Mac better too, is the people are going to turn their noses up at it and say it's not really Mac stuff, and that's going to happen. That's inevitable no matter what happens. But I do think it will fundamentally make the Mac more capable. And so I'm for it. As a Mac
user. I think, I mean, this is one of those cases where I do think a rising tide lifts all boats. I think this is good for everybody.
Yeah, and the fact is that this is where you get a whole influx of new software, because people are much more motivated to make iOS software than Mac software at this point. And yep. if you get all of Apple's platforms at once, awesome. That's even better. So,
yep. It's just an interesting time.
Yeah, it is. And will continue to be. All right, well, we're back on Fridays. We did schedule. We moved it slightly from our schedule, but we did. We have still sold out everybody and have scheduled our secret podcast for Friday mornings, my time, noon Stan time.
It's a good time. It's a good time to do it.
It's a good time. We have a good time. And I hope you had a good time. Look in your email this weekend for the newsletter, the monthly newsletter. We'll have some stuff in there about, you know, it's a quiet month. Nothing much going on. Not much to do. But until then, thank you for subscribing, and bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.